Welcome to another episode of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Today we are discussing the power of ball movement, and joining us are two great coaches from the college game, Providence head coach Ed Cooley and Georgia Tech head coach Josh Pastner.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
All right, Monica, good to be back with you here. I'm Dallin Cuff, Monica McNutt, the power of ball movement on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Monica, I know me and you both played off the ball. So we're all for the power of ball movement and finding a way into our shot pocket, I think. No doubt about that.
100%. Like, I'm sure that at some point, if I'm a parent, like, I'll be the person that stands yelling, swing, 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 swing.
Get to that second and third side. Find my hands. So to break it down with us, we got two great coaches. First, Josh Pastner, who's currently the coach at Georgia Tech, had a great playing career at Arizona, four-year letterman, was part of the 1997 national championship team under a legend in Lute Olson, went to be one of the youngest coaches in the country at Memphis, taking them to the postseason multiple times. Now at Georgia Tech, just won their first ACC tournament in almost two decades. So great to have Josh on as well. And look, Coach Cooley giving some love. He knows what's up, too. He's taking his Providence Friars to a Big East championship. Tournament championship back in 2014, was a great player at Stonehill, and now running the show at his hometown squad, the Providence Friars. Guys, great to have you on to discuss the power ball movement and your experiences as coaches. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having us. I appreciate it so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. Absolutely. Looking forward to talking ball movement.
Yeah, let's dive into it. Before we get into to the actual, like, topic itself, and Ed, I want to start with you, is obviously the game has changed in the last 10 or 15 years, and the ball has been much more, you need ball dominant guards, and it's important to have them. Those guys win games, but you still have to now teach ball movement, I assume, a little bit differently. So as the game has changed and guys' skill sets have changed over the last 10 or 15 years, how is your job and your approach changed in terms of just teaching offense, Ed?
Well, you know, there's a lot of breakdown drills that we try to do. You know, first and foremost, you try to break down 3-on-3, no dribble. And that gets, you know, that gets the ball, and the ball has to touch three sides before you can even attempt a shot. So it gets guys to play off the ball a little bit more, read their teammates, you know, whether it's a back cut, it's a screen away, it's a replace yourself. So we try to, with the changing of the game, especially with the big dominant post players, there's not too many traditional back-to-basket post players. So you have to change a little bit of your philosophy from the past, the old school Big East, where it was, you know, ground and pound, to now more spread and get that ball moving from side one to side two. If it gets to the third side, you're going to get a really, really good shot. May not go in, but you're going to get a high percentage shot.
Josh, how do you approach the changing of the game? And you obviously went from one institution to a different one, and some of the guys you maybe had, especially getting to Georgia Tech, were different in their skill sets. So how have you approached the change in the game in the last 10 to 15 years?
Well, first of all, what Coach Cooley said, spot on, and he's for any coach out there listening, watching, I say this with all sincerity, whether Coach Cooley was on here or not. He's a tremendous example of somebody that has continued to be so successful. Doesn't matter the year, the game, the players, his consistency at his program has been at a very, very high level for a long period of time. And even for myself here at Georgia Tech, we hope to emulate what he's done at Providence with the success and the consistency. It hasn't been a one-year. It's been year in, year out. He's done it at a very, very high level. So I say that I'm he's a great representation of being able to, for coaches out there to see what his program has done. And I hope we can have that same type of success here to be good year in, year out. And when he's talking about ball movement, it's exactly, there's a lot of things. Like I always tell our guys, I tell our staff, you know, everyone says, hey, cut hard, 5-on-0, cut hard. But, you know, with ball movement and in cutting, you've really got to practice it. And it's kind of what you're going to be, what you emphasize and what you reinforce. There's a lot of things in basketball that you want to be really good at. The reality of it is, you, as the head coach or the coach, is going to be determine what they feel is most important. Because we all want to have the ball move side to side. We all do want to get to the second, third, fourth side. We all knew by numbers, you have a higher chance of scoring and being more efficient. But a lot of it comes down to, do you put that as a place of emphasis and high reinforcement? Because in the end, that's what the team's going to be. So as coach said, you can get to that second, third side and that thing's moving. At some point, the defense will be able to break down.
Absolutely.
Those are great points, coaches. But I guess for me, even within ball movement, right? Like there's the concept of it within your system, whether you're a team that backdoors or gets out in transition or plays high low or inside out. So what is kind of the key to drilling it for your guys in a way that allows them to understand the system, but also make the right decisions, Coach Cooley?
Well, you know, I mean, all of us, you know, all of us have an offensive philosophy, you know, and, you know, for me, the way I coach, my philosophy is make sure your best players touch the ball as much as they can. Not that you don't appreciate what the other players on the floor do. Yet, even when you look at the NBA game, really there's 2-3 players that get the most shots. And in your preparation and in your ball movement, you have to strategically put those players in positions where they're good. Where do you want the ball? So when you're talking about your offensive scheme or your offensive system, you emphasize ball movement. 100%, coach, you emphasize cutting. And your cut sets up whatever, you know, offense you're trying to run. Yet my best players are getting the ball. And that ball better find them, or there's going to be somebody who can find them. And I think a great thing to emphasize is with the ball movement and the power of ball movement, if you can get 2 or 3 guys on your team to average over 3 assists a game, that thing is really going to pop. We talk about ball movement sounding like a song. It has to hum. The ball has to hum. If it gets stuck and it's a Barry White tone, you're not going to be very good. So don't, you know, Barry White's a great singer, but probably couldn't play basketball. So keep the ball singing, keep the ball humming.
Coach, I want a rendition. Are we going to get into like Ecstasy or something for us? Want to give a little Barry White for us?
Yeah, I'm a little Barry White guy, baby. You know, my wife, she likes that voice every now and then.
Coach is spot on everything he said about that. And just to add to that, you know, here at Georgia Tech, we run a lot of you know, just a lot of cutting and moving. The one issue that I've had becomes because our offense is a very equal opportunity offense, and because of that, sometimes you don't get the guy the exact area where you want him the ball. Other than when we have to maybe call a certain play because we see something and we want to have a set play. So within our offensive flow and freedom, you know, with structure, at times guys will have the ball, maybe not who you want them to have the shot at the right spot, because that's what's great about motion or a passing game. It's so unpredictable, hard to guard, hard to scout. It's also what's bad about motion and the passing game is it can be unpredictable and you don't know who sometimes going to end up with the ball and where at. So sometimes when we do want to get that guy, the student athlete that writes in the ball in his hands at the right time, at the right place, someone's, you know, got to go and we see a mismatch, we probably need to set up a play to be able to do that. But just for my own personal feeling of a way for our team to be successful is I always like to, and we talk about this all the time, about 60% of our field goals, we want to be assisted. Mm-hmm. That means the ball's moving. It's not sticking. I always like to say, don't give the ball a headache by just pounding on the floor and don't massage the ball mm-hmm. either, while you're just holding it and massaging it. That thing's got to move like a, almost like a hot potato or a hot stove. You know, you touch a stove that's hot and you're ready to move it. And the same thing, kind of that thing you're just moving at. And but I use those all the time. Don't give it a headache. Don't massage it. And I always like to tell guys, don't till the grass. So like a lot of times if you're just standing on the grass, you don't get the sunlight to the grass and it doesn't grow. So you got to keep moving and get off that spot. And so, but with that, you do have those situations where sometimes you're going to have to maybe call a play to get the ball where you want to with a certain individual in an opportunity to score the ball.
Well said. Yeah, Josh, I think you, sorry, coach, go ahead.
No, I said, well said. I mean, I like some of the terminology you use, you know, don't kill the grass is a great one. That means, you know, if the ball is moving and you're standing still, you know, there's not the correct spacing on the floor. So great terminology.
No, I appreciate that, Coach.
Yeah, Josh, I think you guys have been, your assist rate's been great in the last couple of years, you know, relative to the ACC and the country overall. You mentioned 60% of your buckets, but Coach Cooley, you touched on something that I want to go back to, is you want your best players on the ball at the right time. Within that goes defining roles. And you got guys coming in from high school teams where they were the best player in high school team. They were all state, whatever it may be. And some of those guys may not be able to carry that forward at the Division I level. How do you manage talking about roles and handling that situation? Because a lot of younger coaches that are dealing with high school kids or middle school kids, it's even a different and maybe more difficult situation. So how would you advise them in terms of managing roles and being clear with your players about what that role is?
I think anytime you can be open, honest, and direct, and you build that player coach relationship, and you know, there are going to be some things that you're going to give in on, but there's also going to be something that you're not going to give in to as the coach. And the more that the player sees you, the person, the mentor, and life skill, a life skill coach, not so much a basketball coach. This game changes lives, not because you can have a game winning basket, not because you're 7 feet, but because they know you, the coach, love them, the person, not the player. So when you can be that open and honest, the other conversations are easy. And in life, nobody promised fair. There's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be the player you want to be. Show us what you can do. We recruited you to do X. We want to win as a team. And within that, we try to have roles identified right away. And those teams that embrace roles and individuals that embrace roles toward winning create a culture of winning, you know, and your time will come as you develop. But for the young freshmen that are in high school and CYO, embrace, be a star in your role. What is your role? What are you good at? I'm a coach that looks at what you do well, not what you can't do. I think so many times people want great recruiters to work with. I want great evaluators. I would rather have a great evaluator versus a great coach. Because if you can evaluate the right talent, your coaching's easy. If you just go recruit an athlete that can't do much, then you really don't have a skilled guy that can pass, shoot, dribble, catch, instruct, lead. So when you look into the DNA of these young men and you look at their background, are they coachable? Can you help them? And are you open, honest, and direct from day one? Don't oversell. Don't over-recruit. And I think if you follow some of that philosophy, and it don't always work, but I think it worked for us. I think I'm going into year 28 of coaching, 16 as a head coach. And I pinch myself every morning, honestly, from where I'm from. And coach, I appreciate your kind words on consistency, but with consistency becomes the programs that give the opportunity to run their programs. And, you know, for all these coaches that are listening to this, there's a lot of luck involved with this as well. And a lot of humility. And being on something like this, you got to give of yourself to give back to this great game that has changed many of our lives. Man, this has changed my life. Something, this little ball that I have has brought me around the world. Mm-hmm. Around, yeah. Think about it. I mean, we've been to nations and countries and states and arenas. I look around and say, God bless America, man. God bless America. Check us out, baby. Check us out. So I know I answered that in a long way, but that's how you identify roles, is being open, honest, and direct, and use the word love. I love our players. They may drive me crazy and pound the ball and give it a headache. The grass may be dead underneath it, but there's love behind everything that we do. And I appreciate those young men that have played for us and will continue to play for us.
That's a great moment. My pops used to always say, if you give your life to the game, if you're a student of the game, it can take you to places you never could have imagined. And that's exactly what's happened for all of us on this call, for sure.
Definitely. I mean, that's really been a theme as we've done these podcasts and had conversations with different coaches. You got to make the connections. You got to allow people to see that they're valuable in the space. Coach Pastner, when you look at it, there's one thing for talent and natural given ability and a kid that maybe I don't have to preach to them about ball movement specifically because they get it. And then there's the drilling of it. What's kind of the balance, right? Like when coach says, when you evaluate a strong talent versus someone in a role that you know you're going to have to nurture and coach up, what do you look for when it comes to ball movement specifically from your players?
Well, what Coach Cooley said was just, I mean, if you could just take that and just send that out to everywhere, and that would be the best. What you need to do just on his portion right there is so spot on. I do want to say even though as young as Coach Cooley looks, he did say he's been a head coach for 16 years. That's why he's got the great beard. Oh, you know, and I've gone 12 years, so I'm just getting the gray on the side. You know what I mean? But that's just part of being the head coach. But no, you know, and I will say this about ball movement, and I don't want to bring up about Coach Cooley's age, but back in the day when he was an assistant with Coach Al Skinner, those teams, and of course Coach Cooley's teams moved the ball so well even now, but those teams at Boston College with Coach Skinner, you ever go back and watch them, and they ran like flex and different things. I mean, they moved that ball. It was hard to guard. And I just remember just watching. I was like, man, the way they moved the ball, the cutting, it was five players moving at a time. They played so unselfish. They obviously had great tournament success as well. And to what Coach said about evaluating, and again, I'm just even going back before he was even a head coach, like they had some guys who nobody thought was going to be good. And Coach Cooley could contest this about that they had some guys who were overlooked by a lot of schools and ended up going to Boston College who people didn't think was going to be good enough. And multiple ones have played in the NBA and they had that success. It was kind of that, like Coach said, about that understanding of playing together, five players playing together. And so, you know, so Monica, when you mentioned about how do you do that, you're right. Not every player comes in, because when you're coming from high school, a lot of times the high school player, you know, is used to being the best player on their team. They're used to having the ball in their hands 90% of the game. And the reality of it is when you get to college or most at a higher level, you're only going to be playing with the ball, maybe if you're lucky, 2% of the time. 98% of the other part of the game, you're going to be playing defense, cutting, not having the, you know, not touching the ball. So you've got to be good in those other areas. And that's why those teams that are able to really be in sync. And I just think it takes time. You know, there's chemistry involved. You can drill it and you've got to do it over and over, but it just takes time. And I think when there's success and people are excited about it, the players want to do it even more. And that's why celebrating assist, you know, making sure the person making the pass, or even as I like to say, mm-hmm. the hockey assist, is celebrated as someone setting the great screen. You know, they is as celebrated as the person making the basket. As we all know, the person that makes the basket is probably going to get the highlights, but we as the coaches have got to really celebrate the other ones who set that person up to get that basket.
That's really important what he just said right there, guys. You know, and when you're coaching your team, when you celebrate success, it's not so much the end result, it's what created the end result. Like, exactly. Celebrate is a great word to use. Hockey assist, the assist, the great back screen, hammer screen, down screen. Like, as the head coach, and they will follow you, praise it, show it. Show your emotion toward the non-basket. And that, to me, just radiates within the group and within your organization.
Absolutely. And we spend time, because like, and Coach is right, like, how many times in the film, even if they miss the shot, we'll say, this is a great shot, or this is a great play. Just like Coach said, instead of just focusing on the result of the ball going in the basket, because those are sometimes, as Coach mentioned, you got to get a little lucky along the way. I mean, you could just, it's a make and miss game. Sometimes the ball does fall, sometimes it doesn't. But if you're playing the right way, you're playing hard, the ball's moving, you're getting great opportunities and the ball doesn't fall, you can still say you're playing good basketball. Sometimes the ball just doesn't fall through the hoop. So if you're celebrating all those things and really focusing more on just on the actions and how you're playing, more so than does the ball just go in, we'll set up the opportunity for the team to really be excited about playing that way.
Yeah, I feel like we've heard that a number of the pods, just in terms of, you guys are saying, celebrate almost the process of how do you get to a good shot? How do you, not the fact you made a shot, but how do you get to the best shot available, and celebrating those wins along the way to get there, whether it's the hockey assist, the back screen. But let me ask you about that. And Coach Cooley, I'm going to start with you. In terms of, you're mentioning some of these things, and of course, I always flash back to being a player, and we did like 30 minutes on 5-on-0 offense, so the Princeton offense, and that's not exactly enjoyable. And you could tell, guy, we were bad that year. Guys didn't buy in. So right. How do you get buy-in from your guys to work on the angle of the screen, setting that screen and having the right position, all the little things that go into how your footwork is coming off the screen or coming off of down screen, however it may be, how do you get them to work on all the little things and stay focused? Because every little inch does matter when you're looking at the grand scheme of things to beat really good teams.
Ooh, that's a loaded question right there. It really is a loaded question. And, you know, you start off by telling the guys more than half the game is won off the ball, not on the ball. What are you doing off the ball? And, you know, so when you come to our practice court, there's a lot of different lines where, you know, we're pretty technical in what we're doing. And, you know, for us at Providence College, we don't have a major basketball brand, so to speak, when we go against some of these other behemoths that is historically our blue bloods or emerging organizations. So we have to do the things the correct way. There's no shortcuts. And if there are some shortcuts, you're not going to be here long. You just call it what it is. I'm going to hold you accountable. No is not acceptable. Attempting and trying and giving it all. Buy-in is about winning. Buy-in is about trust. Buy-in is about chemistry and teamwork. Buy-in is being happy. Mm-hmm. And again, the ones who earn it deserve it. If you're not in the film room, you're not getting extra shots up, you're not coming in asking and listening to what you have to do to improve to help the team, and then the team help you, that's where you're open, honest, and direct. And you're not going to be able to reach everyone. You're not. When you look at the way the game is being looked at now, over a third of our young men and women are in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, do we really need 13 scholarships? The answer to that is yes, because it gives young men and women opportunity that probably can't go to college and afford it. But at the same time, when you see these transfers going on, not many are going to buy in if they're not making a basket. Not many are going to buy in if they're not playing 27, 28 minutes. I tell them, if you can play 16 minutes a game, that's a lot. That's a lot. If you can get 9 minutes a game, but how do you turn 9 to 13 to 18 to 24 to 29? How do you do that? Buy in, trust. And it's really hard when you're the head coach. It's a little bit easier when you're assistants. So when you're looking for assistant coaches, you want assistants that think like a head coach, but have actions of an assistant. But you always got to think, what would I do in that situation? Coach, that's probably why you became one of the youngest head coaches in the country, because you always thought like a head coach. And then you gave instruction. Some of it, you just got to be demanding of what you want. You know, in the positions we're in, you can't always ask, because you're not going to get the answer you want. You're going to do it this way. I love you. But if you don't, you see that person over there, they're going to do it.
Yep.
They're going to do it. So if I'm you and you got the opportunity, don't let it pass. And this is what you got to do to improve. Just be open and honest with them. If you don't do it, sorry, next up. Just be honest. Keep it moving.
No, and to add to what Coach said, he's right, because some of the best motivators, the bench. I mean, you know, if you're not going to get it done, I mean, there's no better motivator than the bench. And I do think players could look. Coach said it. I mean, he knows. I mean, he's been around it for so long. He's, you know, 16 years as such a successful head coach, and you're not going to keep everyone happy. It's impossible, because every player, they want to play the minutes. Everyone wants to play, but Coach is so spot on. Guys, players, men or women, it doesn't matter. Pro, college, high school, they respect they might not agree or like it always, but they love the fact if you're honest. They can never say anything if, hey, I know where I stand. I know the situation. Okay, Coach, this is the deal. He was very upfront with me, and this is the deal. I think you get yourself with players, student athletes, as you know, when you start trying to play mind games, and as Coach mentioned, when you're not direct and honest and upfront with them, and you can do all that and still love on them at the same time. And I think that way they kind of know where they stand. Again, they might not agree, they might not like it, but at least they know. And Coach is right. It's hard. College basketball, it's hard to go from high school to college, just like it's to go from college to pro. But due to the transfer portal, people, you know, right now, a lot of student athletes, both male and female, are going in that portal. And what you find is what will be interesting as things move forward, is will that slow down, or will the student athlete understand, hey, not everything's going to happen your freshman year? I think it's very hard. It's very hard from a senior in high school, go to a freshman in college, whether it's the Big East or the ACC or whatever it is, and be an instant impact player. It's going to take time. And I just think hopefully as time goes, people can go back to that and understand that there's nothing wrong with the maturation process and the development process, in that time. But I can't say it enough, and Coach mentioned it earlier, evaluation is, it's not as much about recruiting, it's evaluating is really everything in recruiting. We all can tell who's the best player in America or the top 10 players. I mean, my 8-year-old daughter can see that player is a good player. It's everybody else to be able to really evaluate the person that's maybe not, you know, that's on the radar to be a possible one and done. It's everybody else to the expertise to really evaluate. And I think that's an important part of building a team.
Great. Wow. That was really well said.
I love this. I do have one more question. We've talked a lot about ball movement offensively, right? Coach Pastner, if you got 60% of your field goals being assisted on, Coach Cooley, if you've got three guys averaging three assists, but what about defending a team that moves the ball well? Like, how difficult is that to defend on the other side?
It is, when you're going over your scouting report, the way we scout, we try to take away the known. What's the known? You know, is it a player? Is it a play? Is it their transition offense? Limiting their, second shot up, like Houston, they send their neighbors and their best friends to the glass. They send everybody, the dogs, the cat, so what known are you taking away? And from there, I think you can stop a little bit of the ball movement. One of the, fastest teams, and you play it every year, is Carolina. Creighton has one of the more high efficiency offensive teams. So you systematically have to try to take something away to slow that ball down a little bit. Do you trap the ball screen? Do you down a side ball screen? Do you try to blow up handoffs? So I think you have to make some adjustments within the game that is somewhat disruptive to just try to change it a little, because you're not going to change everything. And then I still think your best defense against those teams is your offensive shot selection. Like, you can almost see it in a game. Coach, correct me if I'm wrong. Like, if you have like a quick bad shot, you see it coming right away. You're up like this before the ball even gets to half court. Layup, dunk, three, lob. So your offense is just as important as your defensive scheme. A great shot eliminates runouts, eliminates turnovers. So that power of ball movement, as we talked about, could limit somebody else's opportunity when they get the ball. Great, great question when you look at ball movement on how to defend it from the other side.
And Monica, your coach is right. Like, a bad shot is like a turnover, even though it might not show up into the box score as a turnover, but it's really, it puts you in bad positioning, transition defense. It just, it really puts you in a bad spot. If you don't mind me asking Coach Cooley, and I brought this up, and I think for the listeners and for people watching, because they might not really know. So, if you don't mind me asking about your time at Boston College with Coach Skinner, when you guys are running the flex, I really thought, and you won a lot of games. Can you just talk about that and what the philosophy was and about that offense? Because people really don't run that anymore, Coach. And I don't know. And do you think you can even, because that's a lot of ball movement and player movement. It's five guys moving at one time when you're talking about ball movement. I would be curious to see if you think that could translate today and maybe what made you successful at that time there.
Well, number one, as the assistant coach, you have to know how to recruit and evaluate for the person you work for and work with. Like, who can play for Coach Skinner, not who can play for Boston College? Like, who can play for Coach Pastner, not who can play for Georgia Tech? Like, what DNA, what type of person can you coach and do well with? And saying that, Coach wanted, it wasn't the most skilled person. You had to have a certain size, and everybody looked at Jared Dudley, slow, can't jump over a book, what he did, he was the smartest player I've ever coached. He knew the game inside and out. and he outplayed Dwight Howard, and it was another kid for the Atlanta Celtics, Morris, I think the kid's name was, that went to Kentucky. I said, Coach, nobody's recruiting that kid right there, and he just beat the hell out of the two top players in America. We got to recruit him. Those are the players that will make us good. Craig Smith, who had hands like a vacuum, but he was only six and a half, 300 pounds. I said, we can get him to lose weight, but you can't teach what he can do. We can't coach that. So look for players in that. You know, I think the flex could work in any era. Because we always say each team in America has a Waldo, and we're going to find him. Waldo is a bad defender. Everybody, I got a couple of Waldos.
Waldo here.
I was a Waldo, but Waldo would foul really hard. We would get a couple
Hey, that's no doubt.
So within the structure of that, you're going to find Waldo. People are going to get upset. They get hit with a down screen, a cross screen, a back screen, a flare screen, every single offensive possession. Now, everybody says it's ugly. It's this, is that. It produced the most wins in the history of Boston College under Coach Skinner. The most wins, the most championships, the most pros. And again, when you teach the game within the game, it's really simple. So I think it can translate in any era. You don't need a skilled big. You don't need a traditional big. You don't need a great shooter. You don't need a great finisher. You need somebody who's bought in. Right back to Monica, what you were saying. Buy-in is everything. Like when you get married, when you go to the altar and you say you do, and you you're hemming and hawing, it ain't gonna work. It ain't gonna work. You know what I mean? I hopefully my wife is in the transfer portal right now. You know what I mean? So that's, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, no, that's great. Nope, that's great. Absolutely. And I recommend for anyone, you know, that's listened, you know, they had, it's a great offense, and you can run it whether you're, you know, it doesn't have, you know, pro college, but even for high school or middle school or for little league. I mean, it's a great offense, and it gets everybody involved. And for younger coaches, even if you're in, you know, coaching, you know, summer basketball, it keeps the parents happy because every player is touching the ball in that course of every possession down, as Coach had just mentioned.
That's a tough one, keeping parents happy.
Oh, nice. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, man.
That's a whole different podcast.
That's a 9-hour podcast.
No doubt. But Josh, you're right. We ran the flex at high school, and I think maybe my high school coach ran it. We ran it all 4 years, and he ran it before and after I was there, and that's how he won a lot of games. But I think it executed a lot of things we've talked about today. Fellas, really appreciate your time. Great insight. Two of the best in the business, two of the best dudes in the game, too. So thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for having us. Appreciate it. Coach, good luck in the recruiting trails, babe.
Yep, right back at you. I'll see you on the road. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
On the next episode of Junior NBA Coach's Corner, we're talking the role of the captain.
Great conversation. Huge topic. We talk leadership with two outstanding guests, UConn and WNBA great Rita Williams and legendary DePaul women's basketball head coach Doug Bruno.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coach's Corner. For more, go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.